Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
It's been a while since most of us have had the chance to travel. So today, let me take you on a little tour. On the road out of Padua in northern Italy, nestled in the lush green hills above the city, is the little town of Vaux. Until last year, it was a pretty unremarkable place. But when the pandemic hit, the little town of Vaux became the front line in Europe's fight against the virus.
The whole of the world was looking at them thinking, oh my God, that's where COVID is. Do we have it contained there?
If you're a regular listener, you might remember Vaux. We talked about it last year when it became the site of the first COVID death in Europe and the first lockdown.
Wine, which was produced in the town, was being sent back because people didn't want to drink it because they thought it would have COVID in it.
With its borders sealed, this little town became the perfect petri dish, allowing scientists to find out more about the virus. Because whatever happened in Vaux would soon be replicated across Europe.
We know this is a closed system. We can start seeing how it affects people in different age categories, how it spreads, how many people get infected.
Regular, rigorous tests have been conducted ever since the outbreak of COVID. And now, some of the results are in, and they're remarkable. For in the town of Vaux, scientists have found a number of residents who appear to be super immune to COVID.
I could see that they were all kind of feeling very pleased with themselves and kind of bonding over this as if they were the Avengers or something.
We know that antibodies fade over time. That's why we'll all need vaccine boosters. So why, in the superimmune residents of Vaux, have antibody levels been rising? And what does it tell us about the fight against the virus? You're listening to Stories of Our Times from The Times and The Sunday Times. I'm Manveen Rana. Today, superimmunity in the Italian town of Vaux.
It feels like a town from a kind of Wild West movie.
That's Tom Kington, Italy correspondent for The Times.
It's the sort of town that if you're driving fast through it, if you blink, you'd miss it. There's a bank, there's the chemist, there is a cafe, and that's about it. This is a town of a population of 3,275, many of them living in sort of small houses dotted around as the town kind of edges off into the fields around, many of which are vineyards because this is wine country.
As lockdown began to ease, Tom visited Vaux. He had an appointment at the town hall with some of its remarkable residents.
I was there to meet a group of locals who, it had been discovered, were the so-called superimmunes, these people who had had COVID at the beginning of last year and not only had developed antibodies, but double the amount of antibodies that were expected and a level of antibodies which were not declining, as you would expect with time, but had actually increased over time. So I was suddenly found myself in a room with three women who were in a really good mood because they had been told they had this amazing resistance to COVID. And it was quite amazing to be in that room thinking of all the antibodies just sort of buzzing around. It felt like, I don't know if you remember the old Ready Breck commercials on TV in the UK, these kids going to school sort of with a red glow around them. I was looking at these people thinking, that's what I'm looking at here. This is the way to glow, the
way to glow, this must be glow. I mean, in an era of pandemic, having an extra dose of antibodies is kind of like having a superpower. I mean, are they a scientific miracle? How did they feel about this, you know, their status?
They hadn't met before. I think they'd sort of seen each other in the shops, but they weren't friends. And by the end of my interview with them, I could see that they were all kind of feeling very pleased with themselves and kind of bonding over this as if they were the Avengers or something. As they walked out, they were all promising to meet for coffee again. And so it was just a really good occasion because they were clearly discovering that they were not alone and in having their superpowers.
Take us back to the start. I mean, we've talked about Vaux before on the podcast because it sort of became infamous, this little Italian town, for its role in the story of COVID in Europe. Talk us through that. How did it all begin?
Well, yeah, it's a long story which builds up to these superheroes. Back at the very beginning of the COVID outbreak in Europe, as you will recall, it hit Italy first. And in the town of Vaux, it is thought there was Europe's first COVID fatality, a 77-year-old man called Adriano Trevisan, who is thought to have caught COVID while he was playing cards in that cafe on the piazza that I mentioned earlier on February the 9th. Buonasera. That night, there was a football game on TV, AC Milan against Inter, and there were quite a lot of out-of-towners who had stopped in to watch the game. So that's why they think he caught it there. He then died on February the 21st, becoming Europe's first victim, sparking a very quick lockdown of the town, signalling the arrival of the virus on the continent. And it was basically under lockdown, full lockdown. No one from the rest of the world allowed to get in, with the access roads guarded by soldiers for 2 weeks. Then what happened is that the whole of Italy was put under lockdown. So suddenly it kind of made no sense to seal off this one town. But for those 2 weeks, Vaux and a number of other towns in northern Italy were basically sort of the whole of the world was looking at them thinking, oh, my God, that's where COVID is. Do we have it contained there? The answer, of course, was no.
I mean, it's sometimes hard to remember the before times, the era before the pandemic and before lockdowns were a thing. For them to become the first town in the whole of Europe to be locked down, and in such a remarkable way, literally every road being blocked by the army, nobody being allowed in or out, how did that affect the people in the town?
Well, they were obviously terrified, and then perhaps even more perturbed when lots of men in white coats arrived, because the governor of the region of Veneto, Luca Zaia, decided that he should immediately swab every resident so they could just basically figure out who had it, who didn't, and then act accordingly. Luca Zaia is an interesting character. He'd graduated in animal husbandry. So as he's told me in interviews, he knows about viruses, and hence his rush to get in and find out who had it, which is what they did. They all came in with their masks and their gloves on, and every local was tested. At that time, an academic, a microbiologist from the University of Padova, stepped in, a man named Andrea Crisanti, and he came in and he said, okay, well, we can put these findings to great use. What they did, the first thing they found out was that a number of the people who tested positive were asymptomatic. And this was one of the first big indications that this virus could be passed on through carriers who were asymptomatic, which made it, you know, invisible, much more dangerous.
So it was kind of a perfect little petri dish to carry out controlled tests to see what we could understand about the virus.
It was a kind of Truman Show with virus. It was like a sort of playground for the experts from the University of Padua.
This second round of tests to establish the level of antibodies in the residents showed some remarkable results.
And they found out that 162 people had some form of immunity thanks to contagion they'd had back in February or early March. Now, then They came back again in November of last year, 9 months on, and most of that 162 people were among a group of 156 who were tested again for antibodies. Now, what they found was that half of those people had shown a decline in the number of antibodies they had 9 months on, still plenty to keep the disease, the virus at bay, but they also found out that 16 of the subjects whose antibodies were still present in November were at a level more than double the antibodies they'd had back in May. So over 9 months, the antibodies hadn't faded, they'd doubled. What was the conclusion they reached? Well, the experts decided that these people had had some form of contact again with COVID after May. They didn't suffer, but the COVID entered their body, infected a few cells, was quickly eliminated by the antibodies they already had, but in the same time, the virus stimulated the production of even more antibodies, and none had symptoms. So what we're talking about here is a sort of contact which stimulates the production of way more antibodies. So you come out of having had a contact, and you're even more immune than before.
So when you spoke to the scientist, to the expert, did he think that was even possible, you know, for antibody levels to grow before they saw them doing just that in Vaux?
He said, look, many viruses stimulate the further production of antibodies when there's a contact. So we weren't too surprised by this. What we were surprised by was the fact that this contact could more than double the COVID antibodies you already had. That really extends the time you're protected. So at that point, I said to him, okay, fine. So this is happening to people who have had COVID and they have their antibodies thanks to having COVID. What about the people who've had a vaccine and they have their antibodies thanks to having had the vaccine? And he said, yeah, no, I think that would be the same effect. So if you're vaccinated, you have that contact, then yes, you too could be in line for having a doubling of your antibodies.
Well, that sounds promising. Coming up, we'll have more on the science behind this discovery and what it could mean for the battle against COVID-19. But first, here's a letter from the editor.
Hi, I'm John Witherow, editor of The Times. Thanks to you, we get to cover the broadest and most important daily news stories. To enjoy more remarkable stories every day, subscribe to The Times and The Sunday Times and get 1 month free. Visit thetimes.co.uk/stories of our times.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Off Air, the podcast. With Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
Keep your cheese in the sink.
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times Radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times Radio app.
How is it possible for some of the residents of the little Italian town of Vaux to be super immune to COVID? We wanted to understand a bit more about the science behind superimmunity and the behaviour of antibodies, so there was really only one man to turn to.
I'm Tom Whipple, and I'm the science editor at The Times.
I recently went and had an antibody test, and they sort of told me that if unless I'd had COVID in the last few months, they probably wouldn't necessarily be able to tell me if I definitely had it, because antibodies fade. Do we know how soon they fade, at what rate? I mean, how long are people remaining immune at the moment?
The first thing to say is that antibodies are a proxy for how immune you are. We don't really know what an antibody test coming out positive means in terms of immunity. Antibodies are, for a start, they're only one part of our immune system. The reason we have this big focus on antibodies is partly because they're easy to test, whereas things like T cells are a lot harder to test. Very, very, very crudely, and any immunologists listening, please close your ears now. Very crudely.
Look away.
The antibodies are a little bit more specific, and there's a particular kind of neutralising antibodies, which if you imagine the coronavirus is this thing sort of battling around the place with lots of spikes on, and the spikes are what get into your cells. The antibodies, one of their jobs is they'll attack the tip of the spike, and if they coat it, it's not getting into your cells. And those are neutralising antibodies. And that's part of the concern, as an aside about variants, is they some of them seem to change the antibody response because they change the shape of the spike so they can no longer lock onto the top of it. Now, as well as that, though, we have T cells which attack a bigger section. They get to learn a bigger section of the spike, and they're less the sort of frontline shock troops. They're more things that will lessen the severity of your infection if you have an infection. But they're far harder to fool because they're looking at a far broader picture of the virus.
And with the antibodies, in people who've had COVID, have we seen them sort of dissipating over time?
This is completely normal. So if you get a COVID infection, your body is initially going to expend a lot of effort making antibodies and trying to defeat it. It makes perfect sense from the body's point of view that it will then expend less effort in the months to come, and you'll have less of these antibodies circulating around, but it will still maintain the ability to make them if necessary. But it will wane, and the amount it wanes will very, very broadly depend on the severity of the initial infection. It equally makes sense that if this is something that really perturbs your body, it's going to think, I need to maintain a strong line of defense against it. So you would expect these to wane, and in an extremely crude sense, you would expect the extent to which they wane to determine how soon it is before you can be reinfected.
Tell us about what scientists have found in the little town of Vaux in Italy, because this seems quite surprising.
So in this town, they've been following the same people and doing antibody tests, and they've found that in most of them, the antibodies wane. In a few, they seem to be getting higher, these sort of super immune people. Everything is speculation, but a very obvious reason why that might be the case is that they've been infected a second time, probably without noticing it. We can see this very clearly in lots of ways, particularly with the vaccine program. The reason we get a second booster vaccine is because it does just that, it boosts it. And you can see in people that their antibody response gets significantly higher after that. Equally, there are studies that show that if you've already been infected, then the first vaccine acts a bit as like a booster, and it increases your antibody levels vastly more than people who haven't been infected. So one theory is that these people have, their antibodies have waned over time. They've been infected because of perhaps those T cells fighting things off. They haven't even really noticed the infection, but their body has noticed it, and it has once again, it said, right, this is a circulating virus. This is something I still have to be worried about. So I'm going to boost my antibodies. And this is broadly, well, A, expected, but B, good news. One of our possible futures that we're branching out into, where the world becomes accommodated to the virus and the virus becomes accommodated to the world, is one in which we get regular boosts of our immunity simply from the fact that it's continually circulating. You know, one of the ideal outcomes is once humanity's dealt with this, we'll continue to give birth and have new generations. Those generations will end up getting infected without even noticing as children, and then throughout their adult life they will again keep on getting infections. Maybe they get a mild cold and don't know what it is, but each of these infections boosts their immunity and gives them the protection that means that this virus that entered with such a crash and such a cataclysm actually just becomes an unnoticed part of our lives. And then maybe when you reach old age, as with flu, you have to get some sort of extra protection from a vaccine. But for the rest of us, who cares?
And with the people who they've found who are now super immune, who have the extra dose of antibodies, does that make them more likely to be able to fight off variants of COVID because they've got so many more antibodies that are used to fighting off the ordinary strain of the virus?
Yes, and this is a debate that's happening at the moment in all sorts of interesting ways. I mean, so one way to defeat a variant is to have a very specific immune response to it. Another way to defeat the variant is to have a very strong immune response against the original strain. You go for kind of quantity over quality. And at the moment, we're looking at, and all the world is looking at, booster shots and the idea that we adapt the vaccine to the virus. There is a counter argument that maybe we shouldn't. Maybe what we should be looking at is just boosting the original strain rather than confusing the body, rather than slightly tweaking things. Far better to just get the crude original immune response higher than bother faffing about with slightly tweaked vaccines. And this is quite sweet theory. The idea, they call it the original antigenic sin. And the idea is that your body will, having seen the original strain, it will think, what one immunologist described it to me as like your first love. Your body will always return to this. And even if you try and boost against the variant, actually the immune response it has is going to end up boosting against the original one anyway. And we literally don't know on that. But it's the boosting against the original one is no bad thing.
And Tom, this is such a good news story. And God knows, in a pandemic era, those are quite hard to come by. So I'm loath to do this, but I've got to ask. This seems to be a case of people who've had the vaccine or who've had the virus, who've got some antibodies in their system, getting the virus again, and their system, their bodies are winning. They're producing more antibodies and they're super immune as a result of it. Is there a danger that if you've had one dose of the vaccine or you've got some antibodies and you get the virus might also be adapting?
Yeah, I mean, it's not so much a danger as an inevitability. That's how evolution works. And I think we're entering an age where there's going to be a strong pressure on the virus to find ways to evade our immunity, whether from vaccines or from previous infection. And we've got to accept that. But it doesn't mutate as fast as flu. And the chances are we're going to maintain quite strong immunity, but there are going to be these vaccine escape variants that pop up, because if one happens to mutate such that it can even slightly get around this immunity, then it's going to find itself proliferating a lot better. But this isn't a catastrophe. This is evolution and virology, and it's completely expected.
For now, the residents of Vaux are revelling in their new status as the superimmunes. I asked Tom Kington, who went to meet them, if it had changed their behaviour. Did they feel they were now able to take more risks?
One of the women I spoke to, who's a town hall official, was very excited. She said, the moment that restrictions are dropped here, me and my husband are taking off on the Ducati motorbike that we've just bought, and we're going to do a tour of Italy. So you could see she was really kind of buoyed up by feeling that she had antibodies to the extent that she did. Another of the women said, you know, I now feel much more confident about, for example, going to the supermarket. So if my children need to go out food shopping, I'll say, stop, give me the shopping bag, I'll do it. So she was the one going down the aisles, risking life and limb because she had those antibodies.
And for the town of Vaux, I mean, it was the first death of COVID in Europe. It sort of had, you know, the whole world watching it as this plagued place at the start of last year. What's it like there now? Have they had a lot of deaths from COVID?
Well, funnily enough, in Italy's second and third wave, Vaux did better than surrounding towns. That will have been because I think the locals had it drummed into them so well, the precautions that they needed to take, because they were sort of surrounded by medical experts half the time. So they became, I think, you know, really hip to what COVID could do and the measures you needed to take to avoid it, which was, I think, gave them a great sense of vindication when they had lower case rates in the second, third waves than nearby towns, because it was those nearby towns which had been treating Vaux with some disdain, because Vaux came out of the first wave as a sort of, as a sort of plague hellhole. That was its reputation. And the mayor was telling me that if he went in to have a coffee in a nearby town, they would sort of stand back and say, "Oh God, what are you doing here?" Wine, which was produced in the town, was being sent back when it was sold in other towns because people didn't want to drink it because they thought it would have COVID in it. So there was a kind of backs against the wall spirit involved because people felt that they were really being got at. Hence this wonderful sense of we learned our lessons and later on we cleaned up and we did much better than those other towns.
Given that it's been fighting this reputation for a while, it must be particularly proud of the super immunity label now. How has it gone down?
Well, I think that until I got there, it had been kind of under wraps because the microbiologists from the University of Padua had just put together their findings. And as I said, some of the women had only just learned that they had this superpower. And what's going to happen next is that the work will be published, that the findings will be published. And I think that we can expect to see them at that point becoming a little bit better known. I think in the meantime, we can let them enjoy their motorbike holidays and their brave shopping trips.
You've been listening to Stories of Our Times, a podcast brought to you thanks to the subscribers of The Times and The Sunday Times, with me, Manveen Rana, and my guests, Tom Kington, Italy correspondent for The Times, and Tom Whipple, our science editor. You can read more from both Toms at thetimes.co.uk. The producer today was Joshan Chana. The executive producer is Poppy Damon, and sound design was by Tom Birchall. If you'd like to get in touch with any ideas for future episodes or any thoughts on what you've just heard, then please do drop us an email to storiesofourtimes@thetimes.co.uk. And if you enjoyed this episode, please do leave us a review. It'll help others to find the podcast. Thanks for listening. See you tomorrow.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.